Hello, everyone, and happy Saturday. Welcome to Restoring Our Roots podcast, the voice of the decriminalized nature movement. I know we usually see you on Sunday mornings and afternoons, but today we're doing a little special one on Saturday. So thank you, Rachel and Kevin, for your flexibility today. This podcast is a gathering space where we explore the wisdom of entheogenic plants and fungi, the beauty of natural healing, and the importance of reconnecting with the sacred earth. Usually twice a month, we'll hear from different visionaries, healers, and advocates who are working with entheogenic plants and fungi, exploring realms of consciousness, and returning us to a balanced relationship with nature. My name is Larry Norris. I am the co-founder of Decriminalized Nature, and I'm love to help out teams all across the U.S. and the world, actually, to pass policy to decriminalize these different sacred plants and mushrooms, specifically focusing on plant combinations similar to ayahuasca that contain DMT, which we'll talk about a little bit later, cacti with mescaline, plants that have ibogaine, and mushrooms that have psilocybin and psilocin. So if you need or want to help pass any policy in your local area, please reach out to us. We have a monthly orientation on last Tuesday of the month. So contact us at decriminalizednature.org. I'm excited today to have our behind the scenes maverick there, Rachel, to also be our guest with Kevin today. So I'll do a twofer on that one. thank you, Rachel, for all your help on this project, making it always happen. Rachel's going to be not only putting this live on our different channels, YouTube, Odyssey, Rumble, right now, but in a week, we'll also be putting this on Spotify and on a variety of other platforms. So keep an eye out for that. I think we're now on iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, YouTube Live as well, and all those different types of sources. So just find us there. If you'd like to make a donation to help this project continue on, please go ahead and do that. There's some donation buttons on these different platforms. So just click, and or you can come find us at decriminalizednature.org. And it's also for the live listeners. Do we have questions and answers today, Rachel? Since you're also the guest,
Yes.
Great. So if anyone's on these live platforms and you also want to ask any questions, please go ahead and leave a comment, leave some questions, and we'll address those about 10 minutes to the end of the show. It's always a fun way to sort of connect with the audience. So please reach out and put something in the chat box there. I'm really excited to have our guests today. We have both Kevin and Rachel here. I met Kevin through Rachel some time ago, and I was really fascinated by a variety of the conversations that were coming up. Both of you had some great conversations around the inner experiences, about sort of consciousness, what is consciousness, what's the nature of reality, and also just kind of systems theory. You know, what kind of systems are we sort of forced into? What is sovereignty? What is these sort of relationships we're dealing with in terms of government and laws and all these types of stuff? So it's going to be a really exciting conversation today. I'm really pumped to enjoy this conversation. I think I'll be listening as much as I'll be learning and talking as well. So thank you both for being here and, you know, for diving into the conversation today. So start off, how are you both doing today?
Oh my gosh. Amazing.
Amazing. Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. We were just talking before this conversation about how, like, we're usually on Sundays, but we're on Saturday today because of like just the way life and time works. And it's perfect because we just came off a journey with Siri and Rue. So it's like coming out of like back into reality and, just to realize like reorient yourself a bit. So, it's like perfect timing, right? I feel like.
Great. Yeah. Well, thank you coming from the ineffable to the effable now, right?
Yeah.
So no, it's divine good. Timing.
And that was the word I was like searching
divine for. Divine timing.
Divine timing. Like being, like relationship with time. I feel like that's been something, when you wanted to reschedule, Larry, even I was just like, I need a Google Calendar invite just because I've been writing a lot. And so when you're going into other worlds or even when you're going into like psychedelic space, time doesn't operate the same. And so we're like that movie where like you're on a different planet and like 4 years have passed, but like you've been a second. So like, Interstellar, right? And so you come back and like, okay, I just need to know where, like what time space we're working with so that I know to meet you at the right place. So that's just, that's, I think, a different relationship to time rather than like, oh, it's like Monday at 9 p.m. What is that? It only has meaning because you give it that meaning. So.
Right. And time dilation is such a big part of the experience too, where you have those, even an interstellar or inner experience, right? Yeah. Where all of a sudden you're like, I feel like I just, you know, lived 50 years and it's only been 3 minutes. Okay, here we go, right? Ready to go. So Rachel, we know a little bit about your backstory. If you want to share a little bit, but Kevin, maybe share a little bit about your bio, how you got kind of interested in this area.
I want to let him talk. Because people are like, we live stream together. We do like DJ and dance sets and like, I'm his like MC and stuff. So I just feel like we have that masculine feminine thing where he provides the space and container for me to like do my thing safely, right? So I'm gonna let you start because
I'm Kevin, and my name is Kevin, and I've been into psychedelics for it's been a long time now. Entheogens, they've become entheogenic for me mainly since 2012. Before that, it was more, I would say, recreational and just sort of exploring. Like, I grew my first batch of mushrooms when I was about 16 years old. One of the head shops up the road of mine had grow kits. It was basically colonized grain spawn ready to go. And they had substrate and they had the whole kit. You just had to sterilize the substrate. And
is that legal at the time?
At the time, yeah, it was legal because it was not like there was no fruits, right? And even the fruits are technically not illegal. That's, again, what we're going to get into later on, is this whole misinterpretation of corporate law and, you know, the language that ends up becoming a cage for us. So that was another thing I sort of struggled with throughout my youth was, you know, I got busted, nothing big, but when I was about 16, again, around this time that I was exploring my consciousness, I got busted just for grabbing a little bit of weed off of a friend. And they pulled me over in my car with a few of my friends and
in
split
front
us all
of, like,
up.
Your neighbors and stuff.
Yeah, and it was just like big intimidation campaign that they did. And, you know, and it was just, I was so young and naive at the time that looking back, you know, if I knew then what I know now, I would have handled myself very differently. But, you know, that is just what life is. So that's why I'm here today too, to share just some things so people don't have to go through this, what I went through as a youth, and other people have gone through worse, being incarcerated and, you know, and even being, you know, beaten up just for something, you know, being arrested in the middle of that. And maybe you're resisting, but you're sort of arguing the fact that, like, this is not really a law, and like personal freedoms, and some people argue personal religious rights and stuff like that. So I've just witnessed for a long time this sort of the offsideness of the government, and just there's no compassion, despite them sometimes trying to label their methods being compassionate. And that's just something that has caused me a lot of just conflict in my life, just trying to find my place in the matrix and sort of just seeing how easily you can fall through it and fall through the cracks and be homeless. You know, a lot of people are just like one paycheck away from homelessness, you know, in the current state. So
we live in a big city, so you see it.
We live in a big city, so we see it a lot. We see a lot of people in tents around us. And, you know, I do think the fentanyl crisis is somewhat manufactured. And this is, you know, maybe conspiracy, whatever, but it's just the deeper you go with plant medicine, there's certain things that just come up that I feel is just intuition. And I've just been following that and even questioning it and putting it to the test as I work with plants and with fungi. And it's just helped me develop sort of a trust in my own senses now that I've been using to sort of as an instrument to go to the next step with everything, go to the next level. And it does take courage a lot of times, and it does take checking your own ego, and it does take just not having to be in the limelight for a little while. And that's what I did. And that's why, you know, most people don't really know me in this world, in the psychedelic world, because I've been kind of turned off by the psychedelic community over the years as well around here. It's gotten really leveraged to fueling funds and fueling the discussion around, not that I'm against the medical side of all of this, but as
I think it's also like we met being personal trainers at a gym downtown Toronto.
Yeah.
So we met through fitness.
Fitness.
And
yeah.
So when we talk about health, our perspective is very different than I would say like the mainstream model, right? Because it's like you're going to the gym like 4 or 5 days a week to hone a body, and you're like working with like your diet and food. You have a very strong relationship to what goes in, very much builds your body. And that very intimate relationship you have and working with it and having it look a certain way people think it's like magic, right? When you have like a six pack or anything like that and you go through a transformation sequence, but no, it just, it's like a bunch of little steps. And so I think that when it comes to psychedelics, it's there. Like, it's like, just because you don't know how to like explain how to kiss doesn't mean you don't know how to kiss or like how to like squat or like any of these kind of physical practical things. And so there's like that bridging the gap. I think that, when you started working with psychedelics or like DMT or all that in like 2012, I was still working in corporate. So I was like, oh, he's over there doing like psychedelic wizard stuff. And I'm just going to like keep working my 9 to 5. But like it, and then when I had my own breakthrough experience, I finally understood why he was so drawn and called to it. And it's that in our society that's become very difficult to talk about because it becomes pulled into like, oh, we're trying to sell this program to deal with mental health. And like it becomes packaged and both like commodified spirituality becomes sold as opposed to being like, no, it's like this personal way of you coming to it. And whether or not it's LSD or cannabis or mushrooms or DMT or none of those things, it's really your choice. And I feel like it's just a matter of like people don't have the space and opportunity to be able to have like to understand what that is. And I feel like you do it, like I feel like there's a part of you, and I think there's some of us that always love to push against what authority is telling you. And I know this from doing astrology, there's some people who just you can't tell me what to do. It needs to make sense. You can't just say because I said so, and it needs to come from a place of like respect. And that's just where I think our society as a whole, like I think where that's where these entheogens can help a lot. And you can heal the world. What does that mean?
And I imagine Kevin, with you starting growing mushrooms right at 16, you're already seeing sort of the independence and the, you're actually being like, hey, I'm able to create something here myself that takes me to these spaces. And I'm curious now, did you start your mushroom or your psychedelic journey before your fitness journey? Were they kind of together? Because I just had a really, just as a side of that, I just, and we can talk about this in a second, I had a really great conversations recently with somebody about flow states. And how people are going to be, or there's this guy that we were talking about in this interview that is working with mushrooms to help get, or other different types of substances to get pushed beyond what the physical exertion can demand to a new space, to a space beyond, to a flow state beyond. So tell me about sort of your relationship between sort of the beginning of the psychedelics and then your sort of fitness journey and then how those kind of come together.
Sure. Well, I would say it began with cannabis first, which it assisted me in just balancing out my constitution in my vessel. And that earned my trust with nature's medicines. Mm. And once I realized I have this relationship with cannabis, that although the media and, you know, the government prior is sort to of saying, prior to their monopolization in Canada, that led to, again, me sort of questioning, well, these mushrooms, they just grow out of the ground. You can just make them like, and I was naturally sort of like a chemist as a kid, and I used to collect rocks, and I still have my childhood collection of rocks and geodes and amethysts. And, but just that innate love of life and love of nature just said, you know, let me ponder it. And, you know, I love stories like Star Wars as a kid. So, I think like wanting to see if, like the force was like a real thing. And so
at, little experiments.
As a kid. And at the same time, I was probably already 2 years into starting to lift weights, going to the YMCA, the local YMCA with a few of my buddies.
Me too.
There's like, just like a fresh time. So, I was never really into like at that age or anything wanting to like be huge or nothing, but I wanted the edge. I always wanted to like, oh, what can I take? You know, can I take protein? Can I take creatine? What vitamins should I take? I was already taking things like NAC, N-acetylcysteine, and I was already taking other things like GABA back then when I was just to assist with growth hormone secretion. And
you were natural, like
natural body.
So in bodybuilding, there's a concept of being natural, and then there's steroid use, which is like not talked about, but everyone does it.
So, it's like the extra step. And I mean, I'm not against it either. I mean, it's people's personal decision. because that's another thing that's like made illegal. But again, so that sort of coincided with just my interest of like just pushing and striving and seeing what we can do as beings, mm-hmm. instead of just, I'm walking to, you know, I appreciate the fact that I can walk, especially since I had a bad accident a long time ago. I can still walk, thankfully. But I, you know, we were meant to do more than just this like mundane. And I knew that inherently. So I started to just explore, and I found that first grow kit, and I did it, and I had a batch. I could only do one flush though, because being an inexperienced grower, I ended up getting, you know, mold growing on them, or like, you know, trikes they call it, which is like the green mold you get on bread. Right. So that started to grow on it. So I salvaged whatever I could, and I dried them out in my room with a fan, and I waited for my parents to like go to a friend's house, I think that evening. And I was in the basement and I played Pink Floyd. And this song Time came on, and literally the mushrooms took me on just this whole journey of, like you said, like time itself expanded. And
because time is but a dimension.
Yeah. Like right? My so concept of time, and it just taught me all these lessons. And I finally heard like the voice of the mushroom. And this dose was, I would say, I think it was about a 4 gram dose that I had tried.
Of what strain?
I'm not familiar. Yeah.
Grams could be a blast off.
You don't know, right? Even with weed back then, you never knew what you were getting.
Yeah, right.
That got me in. And I realized, I think after doing DMT later on, I realized like, that was like a marker point in my consciousness that, you know, it's like I popped my cherry, so to say. And, you know, I think even if I leave this realm, that will forever be like a marker of like, oh, that was the time you like already knew that there was more to
you than what you can level. See.
Yeah.
Got
so
that checkpoint.
What would you say the voice of the mushroom was, real quick on that? Because that's interesting to me. When you say you heard the voice of the mushroom, what can you archetype that out for me? Ooh. Can you characterize
it? Do the voice of the mushroom. What does it sound like?
It's just a very, I would say it's just a wisdom itself.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. It's really so literally the voice of wisdom herself. And it's a whisper at first. And that's why like it was an in-call. It whispers, and then it was, Do you want to? It was an offer, and I accepted the offer, and you know, here I am today, and it's been quite a ride. And I mean, I don't regret it. It's just the ride has been since I asked for that, you know, wanting true reality and wanting to know the truth and to have true, you know, true love, and just to have things actually be true, is just to have everything false be stripped away.
That hurts sometimes.
And yeah, that's the painful lesson, but that's what I had asked for. So like, yeah, that's just been the journey so far. Has just been healing through since I would say 2012, of like just awakening to so much and then having to lose so much in the process. So yeah. it's amazing though. Like, yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing how the idea of, you know, we often hear this about with intentions, right? You got to be careful what you ask for your intention, or when you say like you want the truth, realizing that the truth requires all sides to be spoken, right? And sometimes that's a jarring experience, and you have to like really be okay with like, okay. And I think that maybe is also where kind of you get into the flow state where the truth is sometimes suffering and sometimes painful and sometimes difficult and sometimes challenging, but it helps you really realize that you have this sort of extra tank in you. You know, my ancestors are from Finland, and so there's this idea of sisu. Sisu is this idea where you kind of like, I call it sacred tenacity, or like, you know, spiritual determination, where it's like you're at your end point and you're like, I can't make it any further, and then somehow you're able to get in that little tank and find a little extra boost to push you past this unmovable thing, or this this potential that you don't think is possible to move through, I'm sure. And when you're sort of doing, you know, sort of working out stuff, fitness stuff, there's these moments where you hit these walls and then you get through it. And then you're in this like weird, like,
oh man,
like this flow state, right? That comes up, you know? And so this is what we were chatting with my friend the other day about, these sort of like how these can kind of like tap us into these other realms of consciousness, which are just right there. And you're accessing them practically, you know, and you don't necessarily need these substances to get through it, but to know that it exists beyond will help you push a little further, I think.
Well, yeah, we've been using our own formula that we made for training and in the gym.
Yeah, it's a combination of lion's mane, albino penis envy, and cordyceps mushrooms. We use this. Okay, right. We have it like, it's like a movement formula. I use it to like make dances and choreography more with it, because I think there's a big thing with like education, right? So I find that there's a lot, like when I was going to university, I was taking psychology and English literature, and I had it in my head that I wanted to be like a psychologist. And I went through this disillusionment of like, the system's not prepared to actually help people with like mental health or like children's psychology, because it doesn't deal with like imagination or things like the mystical or your spiritual component or any of that kind of stuff, that like everything's so like granular and like, this is, it's this chemical, it's serotonin, it's this amount of this, we're going to block this MAOI, and then all this kind of stuff where like, you know, a lot of this is just like a thought. Like you can think about a conversation that you had last week where you're like, I shouldn't have fucking said that. And then you like get this anxiety, but like you're doing that, not it, it's your perception of it. And so like the more that like psychedelics almost like teach you to like come outside and be like, oh, I control that. It's me doing that to me. And me and Kevin, I was saying with each other, that's like, well, only I get to fuck with myself. I'm not going to let other people like have, like let me fuck with my own head. I already do that enough on my own. And I think the different mind games we play with ourselves has been something that, you know, when you go into these spaces and you like blow away your ego and you come back, you also need to have like gentleness and forgiveness for like the person you were making mistakes, because you wouldn't be who you are now without that.
Yeah. That's what makes the beautiful transformation. That's a beautiful story, right? We all like a story where there's a character arc.
Yeah.
And there's nothing better than when you finally get to see your own.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? Oh, and bringing that to flow state, because I want a total tangent, but it's just kids today, I feel like there's a lot of like things like being neurodivergent or autistic, or I have a learning disability, or I don't learn that way. I always look at it this way, like where it's like, there's just different ways by which we learn or know things, right? Like, how do you know what you know, right? And whether or not someone learns by like a visual presentation, right? Like certain stories, like people look like, I'm illiterate, I can't read. Well, it's like, well, then how are other ways for you to get the story? I can tell you the story. I can paint you an image. I can like dance. That's something that I can teach you, a dance where like this movement speaks to an emotion that we don't have a word for yet. So we strive for it, right? And that's what art always attempts to do, to bring some sort of form to things that are just formless, right? And so in all of that, in the translation, people get really caught up in like what they have like for out as a kid, like held on to what certain things are, and we get possessive about it. And I've learned in my psychedelic journeys and through you, babe, is that like love is not possession and holding on to it. Like love is the ability to just love and know that it's not about what you do for me and how you make me feel, is that I can love you free of strings and just like to have you be exactly what you need to be. And I think in relationships, as I talk to friends who struggle with like trying to find that intimate partner, and like you're one, and like I grew up always like dreaming about my Prince Charming, and I joke about Kevin how I'm like, I think I like dreamed you into life, and that kind of that idea. And in your own story of life, that all the psychedelics I think also show you is that like you can fall in love with your own like origin story, your own comic book of who you are, and like the people in your life do matter more than like these idols out there, whoever they are. They can be like, whether it's like Joe Rogan or the president or whoever, that have been like in this world play put up as like, oh, we need to like put our attention there, it's far more important, I think, to just focus on like your dad, your mom. It's Father's Day tomorrow. So like focus on like the people in your life who play important roles to the character of you that is very important to the universe. So yeah. And if people realize that, there'd be no depression because you'd realize how special you actually are.
Right. Yeah. I think about that often, that depression is oftentimes this disconnect. And then sometimes these materials like help us reconnect with all the different things, including ourselves, including the things that are important to us, and don't get lost in sort of the cycle of, you know, in order to get your, feel your worth, you need to buy this product.
Antidepressants.
Kind of stuff that we're kind of fed every day in advertisements, but like realizing like, wait, we're connected to source. We're connected to, you know, the beauty that is. We're connected to the ineffable and the sacred. And, you know, we are that source as well. And so, so when you feel that, truly feel that, like, I think, you know, that's a difficult thing for the system, because all of a sudden, now all of a sudden you're not buying in to the propaganda, so to speak. You know, you're sort of creating your own experience, you know. So I think that's really, really critical there. And now it sounds like, Kevin, you started off with some mushrooms, kind of growing those, and then now you, it sounds like you're doing a lot of other interesting fun chemistry. Tell me a little bit about this the Syrian rue mix you're speaking about, and maybe some of these other sort of interesting concoctions other people may not know about related to plant medicines.
So Syrian rue is it's another name is Paganum Harmala.
I love that. It's like Pegasus.
It's basically just like seeds of this plant. It's a African Asian plant that grows, and it can be used as an incense. It's got many uses that are for even repelling insects, getting rid of viruses, getting rid of parasites. But it has a very a purgative effect when you take it to mix it with ayahuasca. But the reason why you would make it wouldn't be called ayahuasca anymore, essentially. Because of the fact that, you know, it's hard to harvest that much kapi sustainably.
I think first of all, just that before we did the Syrian rue, I was doing a lot of research on things like SSRIs and serotonin and just the history of antidepressants in our culture. And like they've only started since the 80s, and we found the Syrian rue is an MAOI inhibitor.
Yeah. Right? A lot of people use it in conjunction with chacruna. You still need the DMT plant, of course, but Syrian rue is a very strong MAO inhibitor. It's really a RIMA. It's reversible. So it's our mix still has a little bit of kapi in it, but as I said before, it's hard living where we live to get kapi, you know, that's from the jungle. And it's like, I still feel a little bit like, man, you're like over harvesting it. Like, especially with the amount of ayahuasca tourism. And like, I even don't really know about like all the 5-MeO DMT that people are harvesting out of frogs. I know you can synthesize 5-MeO, but you know, I just,
One thing that's interesting, though, is it's almost, I've heard this from some folks, just as a service side note here, while we also have to be careful with everything, and there's old, you know, kapi vines that people have been harvesting, unfortunately, out, but kapi grows, like, fast. I know some folks in Brazil that have kapi on their in their yard, and it like takes over, like it's pulling other trees down.
That's beautiful.
And some people even say that chacruna is actually the limiting factor on that. But either way, what's fascinating about this discovery of even ayahuasca back in the day is that it's really just, as you're saying, this modulation of MAOI with DMT, right? And that there's some speculation, obviously you have the Jeremy Narby work and such that says, oh, well, it was because the plants told them to go look for this, because how do you find these two plants in the jungle and put them together in a brew? That's actually a technology. It's not just like I'm eating a mushroom, I'm eating a cactus,
not random,
whatever else. These two plants come together, brew them for this long, get them down, and then drink it. Why is that happening, right? And so there's some speculation that it was actually somebody was chewing a kapi vine and met somebody that was exploring with Ananthana peregrina, which is like a DMT snuff. And they put those two together. Someone is like, here, try this. And then all of a sudden they're like, whoa, what just happened here, right? So when you look at now sort of this chemistry across the world of plant chemistry, biochemistry of these plants, you know, there's about, I think, 4,000 different plant combinations that creates something similar to ayahuasca. Now that's interesting enough, but you know, I'm curious because you're obviously pretty well versed in at least this version. You know, the idea that these are plant teachers or plant guides or plant spirits, are there 4,000 different plant spirits that are similar to ayahuasca being one of those plant spirits, but maybe their brother is the Syrian rue mix, or there's something called ayahuasca, which is like a prairie grass and something else, or there's, you know, passion fruit also has an MAOI. So, you know, like all these different things that have MAOIs and mixing them with these DMTs, what types of relationships are we building with these other beings? You said the voice of the mushrooms, what are the different voices of the ayahuasca analogs, you know? And so I'm curious, what's your thought in that process, and how do we come into them and with, you know, obviously some of these relationships would be totally new, maybe plants from, you know, like you say, Asia that are mixing with plants in, you know, California that have never come together before, yes, but now they're coming together for the first time. You know, how do we sort of enter that relationship?
Do you want to go
first? I just love what you said about ayahuasca analogs. I'm going to take that and put it in a book.
Sorry. Yeah, sure. That's a quote actually from, I think, Jonathan Ott, who wrote this paper, who talks about these 4,000 different plant combinations. So, but yeah, that's kind of the idea.
Analog, that there's like, all these brother. Yeah, technology, right? What you're saying, like it's like that true combination.
Yeah,
of
well,
like,
that's both sides, right?
Yeah.
Double entendre.
I love that. I love that.
But straight up, no, it's, I definitely feel that that is what the alchemy is. And it's really up to us to sort of do that experimentation ourselves at this point. Like, and I don't advocate anyone to just like, you know, this is not for everybody. This is, again, if you have the call and you are going to take the care and the precaution and do all the research and, you know, come in a good way. If you can come in a good way, there's really nothing for you to fear. So, as Terrence McKenna said, like once you find your stuff, once you have the DMT or you have mushrooms, you put the pedal to the metal and see how far your courage can take you.
And encouraged.
And so going back to the, you know, like having the different admixtures, this sounds very similar to like Ayurveda is already a very well-established, sort of foundation of practice and alchemy of using nature and having an established, like certain herbs will give you more heat, certain herbs will give you more cool.
Well, so it's like you're talking about even like spice, right?
Spices,
like whether like
yes.
The difference between horseradish versus like cayenne pepper in terms of spice, mm-hmm. and like what you would use different herbs or medicines for depending on what your ailment is, right?
Yeah,
and I think that's also what Western medicine, like we use a hammer for something that needs something very fine and precise.
Just one of those tiny little like screwdrivers.
Smacking it with it, like,
for your
like,
laptop.
You just need to, exactly, like, maybe just ask your body.
The nuance gets lost in the kind of the modern era, but you know, even just like what you're saying there about spice between, you know, how do you actually sort of, you know, really dial in the difference in spice, which is like something like, you know, okay, this is a lot, you know, between horseradish and cayenne, for example, right? Like you said, but they are so different. They're in these totally different categories,
but spicy,
if you're just taking a hammer at it, you know, to extract, we're extracting the whatever to give you, you know, this new medicine, you're missing out on these different values. So I think that's kind of what I'm speaking to is like, what are the sort of these nuance, these subtle details too, between these different sort of ayahuasca typologies, if you will, that exist out there. And you're sort of exploring one right now in terms of, you know, some of that experience, but also, you know, I think Syrian rue, and we talked about this a bit earlier, before the show about, you know, maybe some speculation that the whirling dervishes and the Sufi whirling dervishes, the dancer, they spin around. They were kind of also working with these different materials and then accessing these different states of mind, not only just physically, but also through these sort of psychoactive plants that were in the environment.
Yeah, and I think the flying magic carpet in Aladdin is also based on, like the reds on it are supposed to be like paint from Syrian rue. Mm-hmm. And Syrian rue actually glows like bright blue under UV.
Yeah, UV, it looks like
The tea, any of the extracts in like a tea form or even...
Is there a mushroom that does that too or no?
There is a translucent one that glows. I don't remember
light,
the name,
like
but yeah, Syrian rue is definitely something you do feel. It's for me, like living in the city, I think it's something, because especially getting Kapi sometimes imported into these countries, you know, is not easy. Living where we live in the U.S. too can be some places that have issues with it.
Right? Yeah, like, I feel like that's bringing that into like policy and like the legality of everything. That's where like the borders of everything come into play. Like, it's funny with all the legal documentation, or anytime they're having like, this is a criminal offense or things that are listed in like the code, it's what they cite is just like, they'll like respect the fact that like, oh, these have been used for like hundreds of thousands of years, but we're still going to make it illegal.
We're going to do it anyways.
And then also just the fact is what you're saying, like different, the components and the different substances in there. I feel like the legal these does not, it itself doesn't have accommodations like psilocybin versus mushrooms, right? Mm-hmm. And they're it's psilocybin that's illegal, but then when they seize a bunch of mushrooms, they say like they got this many pounds of psilocybin, and that's just not true.
Yeah, they're taking advantage of people's lack of attention to detail in speech and how fast things go nowadays. Like, no one wants to like sit and actually like take time to read through what anyone is saying, because like, I got to check my phone. Like, that's just the world we live in. Right. So again, like how deep people want to actually go with any of this healing is up to them. And like any of this exploration is up to them, but it starts with like reclaiming your attention. And I still am working at it, you know, the more attention you accumulate, like if this were a video game, and you know how like video games have little like meters in your interface, you have a life meter, you have a meter for like
mushroom meter,
your mushroom powers, right? You have a meter for how many friends you have left, let's say, right? So like if we had all those meters, it would just be like, you could see where you're at and everything, but
mushrooms give you that ability. Idea too. And you're speaking about, you know, kind of three things coming together there. You have this sort of this idea you're speaking about self-exploration, which, you know, I think also like, you know, there's this idea that the Hefter approach, I think, which was like Arthur Hefter is a peyote / mescaline researcher from the late 1800s. And he was like, we can't really research this if you don't know what the experience is like, right?
Yeah.
And you have Sasha Shulgin, who also said the same thing. You have James McKenna, Shulgin. You have a lot of other people, you know, obviously, you know, shamans and ayahuasqueros and taitas all across the world that have been working directly with the experiences to have these sort of self-experimental type ways of looking into this. But that's too, you know, that's, you know, in the current model of medicalization or even the current model of sort of legal frameworks, it's trying to pull that sort of agency from you, right? Go to the doctor who's going to give you the thing, or you can't have this type of consciousness. We are going to criminalize it, you know? And so it's really interesting, this dynamic that's playing out with just the idea of like exploring your own consciousness is something that is so taboo in many ways, you know, and we're obviously moving through that stigma now, but for a very long time, you know, even the idea of even dreams were kind of like, you know, don't really talk about it. But now we're really seeing the sort of, move forward with a lot of people. I think I saw this CNN article, you might have seen it, about a month ago, which was like, you know, increase in unsupervised use of mushrooms over the last 5 years. It's like, we're like, yeah, that's decrim, great, fantastic.
Yay.
So 8 million more people had an experience than they did the previous year. But it's just how the system will frame things, because you're now getting new knowledge that they're not able to sort of guide or sort of propagandize, if you will, you know. So talk to me a little bit about sort of this dynamic between self-experimentation, medicalization, the legal frameworks or the laws around these types of things, how we as sovereign beings should have access to this, et cetera, et cetera.
You take that. Question.
There's a lot there, so take your time.
I can sum it up, though, a lot of these concepts. It all comes down to the fact that each of us that are living beings, the only reason why these pseudo laws seem to have any jurisdiction is because they apply to legal dead fictions. And there's an assumption, because most of us do not, you know, we're not told that we need to anyways, right? But until we're put in a corner, we don't feel like we have to affirm that we are a sovereign living being. Mm-hmm. And it's gotten to that point that we are, that's where we're at. You know, it's been other people's battle before. and it's landed on our lap now to deal with, those of us who want to face it. You know, it's, again, this is no one's putting this, forcing this on anybody, but this is just the situation. Most countries,
especially, we represent like a corporate fiction, basically, right?
Yes. Like, so we are,
I don't understand.
Yeah. We are, this is, you know, we can verify this. Like, we just found, this has been known for a while, but we just found the actual corporation number of Canada, where it's registered within the United States, well, the District of Columbia. It's registered as a corporation, as a business, and they have to file like every year as a business. Canada itself has to file with the United States, this agency, as a corporation. And like, people are like, I don't know if that will sink in for people a lot of the time, but literally all the laws that they're saying are laws that they're applying and just enacting, mainly apply to, if you look at the fine detail, usually applies to persons. They never say people. It's always persons.
We have also an extra layer of stuff just because of the way Canada deals with the crown, like the British Empire, that kind of stuff. Yep. Like the US, like, is a republic. Yeah. It has a very, like,
the city of London is a whole other thing, like in DC, right?
You got it. So once you know that whole, like, the DC thing, like, the United States is really, like, the territory, like, District of Columbia. That's a whole other thing you could get into, like, 14th Amendment, citizen, and that's a whole other presentation we'll do. And one of my buddies has, like, way more, like,
in-depth on that.
We're still trying to, like, untangle the whole Canadian lie here of, like, Canada is not actually a lawful and legal country. It doesn't exist.
So, for example, like, I'm from Winnipeg, Manitoba. I'm not from Toronto. I met him here. Like, I don't know how to explain all of stuff I know, whether or not, like, I have psychic visions or all this kind of stuff. But I always knew I was going to find my husband in Toronto. And, like, when I saw him, I already knew I was going to marry him. And that happened. We got, like moved in after, like, a week or 3 weeks. And, like, I got, so we've been together a long time, and it's quite a thing when you share your life with another person, right? And I think that's a big fear why people don't want to go into these realms, because it's almost like, oh, they're going to see all my secrets and know who I am, and then they're going to know all this stuff about me, and then no one will love me. And but it's, in spite of all that, in spite of the shadows and all that, it's like, I love you, like, no matter what. Like, that's the unconditional love of, like, Mother Nature, Mother Earth, that, like, we're all brothers and sisters on this planet. That's the big, beautiful truth of it. And, like, our life here is supposed to be so much more of, like, a blessing and more fun than the powers that aren't allow it to be. And it's because we've all been tricked to play their game. And in Manitoba, like, Canada's got a very different, like, origin story than the US. Like, US fought for its independence and, like, blood, and, like, it's a republic and it's free and we do what the heck we want. Canada was kind of like, you know what, let's just rebrand colony and call it Dominion and say that we're a country, but we're still really, like, just a British colony. And, like, if you look at the constitution and everything like that, it's all really nefarious, really awful. I come from the prairies, where Manitoba was just had more in common with, like, Montana and the Wild West than anything having to do with, like, you know, that other side, where, like, it's becoming the colonialism, right? And so back in the day, John A. Macdonald wanted to build a stupid railroad from coast to coast, and was like, oh, look, Hudson's Bay sold this piece of land that they said that they owned to the British Empire. But there were people living there, Métis people, society there, that was, like, Red River. They had, like, and then they just came, like, and they started to resurvey the land, and they already had farms, and, like, oh, we're just cutting it up, and you're now part of Canada, and you have to pay taxes. And then these people, who are you? What is this? And they, like, basically killed Louis Riel, they murdered him, and then now Manitoba's part of Canada, and it just rolled on from there. And, like, even in the talks right now where Alberta wants to separate and all this kind of stuff, is that if you really look at the history of Canada, if you actually, like, look at it, it's just a big scam. And really, if people just stand in, like, their own power and just go, like, I am not going to play your game, Canada, and I'm like going to declare myself as like a living being. And like, if we really want to go with Britain and go Magna Carta and Charter of the Forest and talk about law and the documents by which our society stands on, then we need to go back to the source and not just keep on like making amendments and everything's digital. And like, if you don't have a website, then I don't know what your bylaw is. So like, what is that? Like, law is, there's natural law, there's cosmic law. And if you have laws of man that are in conflict with that, there's an issue. That's all. And we as beings who are like representatives of Earth, I think it's just the psychedelics, the entheogens, they're there to help as like tools to help us figure out the solution by which we like untangle ourselves out of this. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was my
thing. Speaking of plants or mushroom illegal, right?
Exactly. Exactly. You don't get to say.
It all comes to jurisdiction, and then when you look at any of the documentation or the precedent legal cases, there's just a trick that judges have been doing with just interpreting certain, like the UN treaty. They just interpret things. This time they interpret it this way, this time they interpret it this way. So it's like, but no one seems to call them out on the fact, like, there's no actual solid interpretation of the law. So how do you expect people to follow it when they cherry pick, when they want a virtue signal? Oh yeah, UNDRIP and like, you know, indigenous rights, when the media is on them, and then when the media is not on them and everyone's looking this way because of the wars going on and the, you know, the made up this and that, they're, you know, passing all these other bills. Like here in Ontario recently, our premier passed this bill, which is basically just a big land grab. And it coincides with like all these things they keep calling, again, more word tricks, wildfires, and keeps getting parroted. These words keep getting parroted. It's okay to just call it fires, but they always have to add their own spin, which is duplicitous. If you don't know for sure, why are you adding these, this context? And this is sensibilities that you start to develop the more you work with psychedelics, because these are sensibilities you have to work on your own self and questioning your own ego as it does tricks with you. And, you know, right. Am I really, you know, and then you end up being like Bikram and being some like, you know.
Well, you're talking about the guru
thing. Yeah. And even like the ineffability of the experience forces us to understand how language can be played with. So what you're saying here in terms of the language game that's being played by these different entities and law and you know, okay, we're gonna toy with someone's understanding because you create reality through words right now.
Exactly.
And so when we hear these experiences where we can't figure out the words to explain what we're doing, we understand how words can be pliable and how we describe something to one person in one word frame is going to make a different experience than if we explain it to somebody else in a different sort of framing. And so I think that's another benefit of working with these different experiences and having these big enough experiences that forces us to focus on language. What is language? Why do we use this word versus this word? You know, and that's really all we, you know, all marketing, all advertising, all propaganda is all language. You can say, take the same idea and put it in five different news media articles and you get a different spin in all of them. And yet at the same time, you know, it's really the essence, the core is still there hiding behind all the different perspectives or the words, you know? So I think that's one thing I've always been, you know, in terms of my own lessons of psychedelic experiences and entheogens, it's like really trying to figure out like, wow, okay, like the way that we use language is so critical. And it's so critical for how we see the world. It's so critical how for people, other people see the world and for, you know, what we're trying to do out here. So so I think that's one thing that gives us a little bit of an edge as we sort of are able to see through some of this sort of language game that's being played out there.
Yeah,
appreciate you talking about
that. Yeah, I just want to remind people to do that, just to pay attention to that when they have the extra time and they make the time out of their day to just, okay, if there's this new law that was passed, if they call it a law, read it over, ask to actually see it, not just on a website or whatever. Can you just show me where this is, who signed off on it? Like, show me all the details and then show me where it says that I actually signed up to follow that. That's another thing. This is all contractual. Contractual means both parties agreed. Mm-hmm. As far as I'm concerned, that is not the case with most of these things we're told we have to do. So I just, that's, these are arguments I just know are never brought to the table, because this, if you hired a lawyer for most of these situations, a lawyer, especially in Canada, right? And a lawyer in Canada, unless you fight again for some religious exemption, you would have to do, but you would take an oath to the crown, the English, some English family. You have to take an oath to them to practice law in Canada.
Well, because we take all of our authority from Britain. That's why.
Exactly.
Like all of our structures. So
this is as like a sort of a side political question that I have that I've been curious about. You know, this whole back and forth between the U.S. and Canada, yeah. 51st state and this, yes, that, and the other.
Yeah.
There's somebody, I think his name is, whoever the current leader is, Carney? No, is that right? No.
I'm glad that you don't know his name. We don't like him very much.
Yeah, whoever the new president is, whoever that guy anymore, is. Whoever it was, he said something like, well, our owners won't allow that. And so who are the owners? Is the owners of Canada the people, which you would assume?
The owners are the British Empire.
You know,
yeah,
that's it's the British Empire, right? Yeah, so Canada is basically, like you said, a British colony that's sort of not able to even have its own sovereignty in this regard because it has to be sort of asking the British Crown or that, if that's okay or not. Yeah.
Again, we'll go back to just paying attention to their language they use. And recently they've been talking about, you know, economic, they're trying to do all this stuff to get the economy going again. And they're trying to always maintain sovereignty of the nation. Sovereignty of Canada, right? They'll say these things. They never say sovereignty of the people. So when people hear sovereignty of Canada, sovereignty of the nation, they go, right? But we don't slow it down and just go, wait, what did he actually just say?
Well, so that's people, like, they play on the emotions. And this is going back to advertising and like how you can use words to inspire or you can get people a rise out of people. We're told, like, you know, you have the national anthem and like we are the true north, strong and free, and like this, like the identity of being Canadian. But what is Canada, right? Is Canada the prime minister? Is Canada the government systems? Is Canada the land? Is Canada us? So what is that if I were to make Canada a goddess, right? And that's why, like, I love superheroes so much, or like goddess and like all these stories, because when you're talking about like what does that represent, what is the meaning behind it, we give it that meaning, right? And so Canada is more than like maple syrup and hockey and saying A and all this kind of stuff. Like, it's just that's like if Canada was like a person. Yeah, like if Canada was like a person and we were all like playing on the school ground, Canada would just be like, just go along with everybody. And like, just like, oh, what are you doing? Oh, what are you? I worked at KPMG. I worked at a big multinational and I had like 137 clients and Canada was one of them. And I know, like, it's so funny how countries basically act on that corporate stage the same way you would think, like the stereotype. Like the US does whatever it wants because it makes the most money. UK does what it wants too because it's old and has a lot of like history behind it. Swiss doesn't really do anything, but they hide a lot of money there. Germany, like, it's just, France is kind of snotty and then like pretends that it doesn't understand English when it wants. Like, it just, there's like different personality types of like different countries when I was like dealing with them. And like, we can't help but as people like to personify things, right? So when we think of Canada, we have this image of like, oh, we've been like what we believe, right? But they take advantage of it, just like no different than how they do casting of superheroes. They cast a different person to put in like a different agenda or message to make people do what they want, because people emotionally, their inner child has, let's say, been traumatized or trained or whatever the heck, we have a certain allegiance, and it's not for anything logical. It's just because like you like emotionally have that tie. It's like being a plant power to the people, plant power to the people, where you dream is where I'll meet you.